Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 32. You learned a lot about a man by marrying him, Bess thought as she headed down the stairs on Wednesday morning. More to the point, you learned a lot about a man by living with him. For instance, some men started whistling as soon as they woke up and didn't stop until they held the morning paper in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. Bess hadn't known this about Joe, but now that she did, she decided that she enjoyed his whistling. It had been a conscious decision, one that had taken nearly 2 weeks of deliberation. True, Bess liked silence for the first 30 minutes of her day, which is why, in years past, she'd made a habit of rising before the other members of her household. But to get out of bed before Joe would mean setting her alarm clock for 4:45, as Joe typically sprung up by his own volition at 5:15 every morning. Bess had tried getting up at 4:45 once, soon after Joe moved in, which had resulted in disaster. Her alarm had awakened not only Joe, but Edwina as well, and the three of them were out of sorts all day. The only thing to be done was to embrace the whistling and to make a few requests. For instance, it was much nicer to wake up to Brahms or Liszt than the more robust Beethoven. Ode to Joy was wonderful mid-morning, less so at dawn. Joe had taken Bess's suggestions to heart, and now most of her day started, as this one had, with the strains of the Swan from the Carnival of the Animals and Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 3. "Elizabeth," Joe called when Bess came into the kitchen, "let me pour you a cup of coffee." He set down his paper and went to the stove. "I don't know if I can recommend reading the news this morning or not. That fellow Hitler seems to accumulate more power by the minute." Bess slipped into her seat. "It's such a tiny country. Does it matter to us?" "It's mattered before. I just pray that it doesn't this time," Joe said, coffee pot in hand. "It's better in general when European countries are democracies, I think." "I'm sure you're right, but I can't bear to think about current events when I haven't had my coffee yet." Bess reached across the table and extracted the lady's page from the paper. "I'm sure Mrs. Magruder has something simply fascinating to say about ways to clean with vinegar." Joe delivered Bess's coffee and took his seat. "Is she the one who gives household tips and advice for the lovelorn?" "Often in the same column," Bess said. "Sometimes Helen and Jane amuse themselves by coming up with letters to send to her. Dear Mrs. Magruder, my beau has a bad habit of spilling his coffee on my carpet. How can I remove the stains, or should I remove my sweetheart instead?"
"I say get rid of the carpet," Edwina announced as she came into the kitchen. "I don't know when wall-to-wall carpets became all the rage, but I dislike them. A good oriental rug is far superior." "Good morning, Edwina," Joe greeted her. "Can I get you some coffee?" Edwina waved off the offer. "I can serve myself, thank you very much." She turned to Bess. "I hemmed Helen's skirt for her and I left it on my bed. Will you tell her if I don't see her? I'm off to the Simples this morning, and I thought I'd walk and enjoy this nice weather. You can just smell September in the air, can't you?"
"How is Molly doing?" Bess asked. "When I visited her a few weeks ago, she was making a skirt for her eldest daughter. It looked like it was going to turn out nicely."
Oh, she's well beyond that now, Edwina reported as she took a seat at the kitchen table. She's made new dresses for all of her girls, and now I'm helping her make a shirt for her husband. She catches on so quickly, you never have to tell her anything twice. I never had much luck sewing shirts, Bess admitted. For some reason, I couldn't get the sleeve set incorrectly. I made Bill a few shirts years ago, but the way the sleeves puffed out from the shoulders, he looked like a buccaneer. Edwina and Joe laughed, and Bess noted, not for the first time, how easy it had become to bring up Bill these days. Sometimes she felt like Bill and Joe's first wife, Phyllis, had become the guardian angels of the house, watching over all of its inhabitants with bemused expressions and best wishes. When she was feeling especially whimsical, Bess imagined that it pleased them to be referred to and remembered. She'd felt Bill's presence powerfully on the night that she and Joe had told the girls their news. Dorothy's idea of serving breakfast for dinner had been just right. The girls thought it fun, and Helen had declared, had she known what they were having beforehand, she would have come down in her bathrobe and curlers. I think I could eat breakfast 3 meals a day, Jane had said as she served herself from a bowl of hash brown potatoes. There's nothing fussy about breakfast. It gives you the fuel you need to start the day, and that's that. I hope you won't feel too energized, Bess said. You might have trouble falling asleep tonight. Well, that's the beauty of summer, isn't it? Edwina said. Jane can laze the morning away if she wishes. Edwina knew already about the marriage and had taken the news gracefully. When Bess said that she and Joe hoped Edwina would remain in the house, the older woman had replied simply, "Let's leave that discussion for another day. For now, I want to bask in the joy of your inevitable union." Bess was hoping for a similar response when she announced over cherry pie and vanilla ice cream that she and Joe were married, and she more or less got that from Jane. "Oh, Mother, how marvelous," her middle daughter declared. "I knew it was only a matter of time. Congratulations to you both." With that, everyone at the table turned to Helen. "What?" she asked irritably. "We all knew it was going to happen eventually, and now it's happened." "Have some manners, Helen," Jane chided. "You could at least say congratulations." "Congratulations," Helen replied flatly, sounding out each syllable, "and best wishes." She turned to her sister. "Happy now?" "Are you unhappy that Joe and I married?" Bess asked reluctantly. She didn't want to set Helen off on a tirade. To her surprise, Helen shook her head vehemently. "I'm glad you and Joe are married," she insisted. "But why couldn't you have had a proper wedding? It's been like this all year. First Miss Grangerfield, now you." "I admit that your situation is preferable to Miss Grangerfield's, and that the two of you actually married. But couldn't you have had a ceremony? Not even a big one. Why, you could have kept the guest list down to 100, and it still would have been lovely. And Mother, I know you wouldn't have worn a white gown. That would have been silly. But I can just see you in a cream suit and pumps, carrying a tasteful bouquet as you walk down the aisle. Father Joe could have gotten a new suit for the occasion." She paused and turned to Joe. "I'm sorry, Father Joe, but you are desperately in need of a new suit. Mother's too kind to tell you, but somebody needed to." "So then you're happy for us?" Bess asked. "It sounds as though you are." Helen sighed as though she couldn't believe how obtuse Bess was being. "Of course I'm happy for you. But I'd been even happier if Jane and I could have been bridesmaids at your wedding and Annie your matron of honor. None of my friends has ever been a bridesmaid before." Oh, Trudy Jefferson was a flower girl at her aunt's wedding when she was 3, but I don't think that counts, do you? And so the conversation continued, with Helen creating an imaginary wedding for Bess and Joe, one which included a string quartet and a towering cake. When the fantasy had played itself out, she turned to Joe and said, "So, Pops, when are you moving in? Please tell me you're moving here and that we're not moving into the rectory." From then on, Helen and Jane had called Joe Pops, and occasionally, when she was feeling particularly wry, Edwina did too. "What are you smiling at?" Edwina asked now. "Are you having an especially funny thought?" "I was just remembering when we told the girls that Joe and I had married," Bess explained. And in that moment, she recalled she had news to share. "Speaking of people getting married, I stopped by the quilting company yesterday to drop off a pattern design, and you'll never believe what Florence told me." "That she and Arthur have reconciled?" Joe guessed. "Quite the opposite. Arthur is engaged to someone else." "Oh, not that frail little creature from Eula's quilting class," Edwina declared. "Why, they've only known each other for a few months." "How is Florence taking the news?"
"She seems absolutely unperturbed," Bess reported. "I sense her attention is elsewhere, romantically speaking."
Edwina nodded. "Beau tells me that Florence and his nephew Phineas have quite a rapport."
"Has his nephew said anything?" Bess asked, silently handing her empty cup to Joe. She would need more caffeine to take this news in.
"Florence didn't whisper a word of any sort of attachment on her part."
"You think she might have, given that we were discussing Arthur's recent engagement. You know, just to mention that she too had found a new love interest."
"I don't think that's Florence's style," Edwina said after a moment's consideration. "After all the drama earlier this year, she probably prefers circumspection."
"Not to mention caution," Joe added from the stove. "Yes, but not too much caution," Bess said. "Sometimes it felt like she and Arthur were negotiating a contract, not planning a life together. Still, I suppose it wouldn't hurt to move forward slowly."
"And I suppose we'd all do well to remember that this is speculation based on an observation of a confirmed bachelor who never took the plunge himself," Joe said as he handed Bess her coffee cup. "No offense to your friend, Edwina."
Edwina laughed.
"Oh, Beau is the last person to take offense. It's one of the things that makes his company so enjoyable. You know, when Emmeline began her campaign to pawn me off on him."
"What do you mean?" Bess asked. "I wasn't aware she'd undertaken any such campaign. Though, come to think of it, Emmeline does have a bit of the despot in her. But what was her objective?"
"For the longest time, Emmeline wished me gone from the Bee," Edwina explained, pushing her chair away from the table. "I believe I'm going to scramble some eggs. Would either of you care for a plate?"
"With toast, please, if you don't mind," Joe said. "But don't stop telling us about Emmeline's campaign. I'm intrigued."
"Oh, you know Emmeline," Edwina said as she made her way to the icebox. "She secretly sees herself as the bee's queen. Or, put more simply, the queen bee. For some reason, she found my presence antithetical to that. Perhaps because I'm older and less apt to mince words or withhold my opinions. Not to mention that the Emmelines of the world dislike changes they aren't in charge of."
"What did she hope to accomplish by introducing you to Mr. Fellows?" Bess wanted to know.
Edwina began cracking eggs into a large blue mixing bowl. "If I were to hazard a guess, I'd say she thought that Beau and I would marry, or, to put a finer point on it, Beau would marry me for my money."
I suspect that Beau entered into our friendship thinking the same. But there was one small problem with this plan.
You had no interest in marrying Beau? Joe guessed.
Well, yes, that. But not only that.
Edwina turned to face Bess and Joe. Beau and I quickly became friends. True friends. He really is a dear man, although he likes to think of himself as a bit of a cad. But actually, he's quite the gentleman, and a gentleman, even one whose funds are fast dwindling, doesn't marry a lady friend for her money.
Bess rose to fetch the butter from the icebox, which she then handed to Edwina.
Have the two of you discussed this in any kind of detail?
Not really, but we've had any number of conversations that alluded to it in the most cryptic but clear ways. We're both quite tickled by Emmeline's schemes.
Edwina paused to reach into a drawer for a knife to cut the butter with, and Bess brought the coffee pot to the table to warm up Joe's cup.
Here's what's interesting, Edwina continued after she lit the stove and delivered two pats of butter to the pan. Something happened to Emmeline this summer. I don't know what changed, but she suddenly became more accepting of my presence in the group. After she introduced me to Beau, she attempted a sort of false friendliness, but the day came when her warm regard struck me as entirely genuine. I don't know why.
Perhaps she fooled herself into liking you, Joe conjectured. Have you ever noticed how, if you smile, you feel happier, even if you're smiling for no reason?
Perhaps Emmeline's false friendliness transformed itself into a true feeling of friendship over time.
Perhaps, Edwina said. However, I like to think that I somehow finally won her over.
It's awfully ironic.
Why is that? Bess asked, returning to her seat and checking the clock on the wall.
6:45. In a few minutes, she would need to call up to the girls to make sure they were awake and getting dressed.
What do you find ironic about the situation?
Edwina gave the eggs a gentle nudge with a spatula. You know, after my Charles died, I thought I could never leave Milton Falls. This is where we raised our family. This is where we grew old together. How could I leave it, even when it was time to leave my home? How could I leave St. Luke's, which has been another sort of home to me ever since I was a child? When I moved in with Bess, I thought I'd found the perfect arrangement. And I had.
She turned to smile at Bess before returning to the eggs.
How wonderful to be in the midst of family life once again, and in such agreeable company.
Here's another irony. The more I've come to love Bess's family, the more I've missed my own. My granddaughter in Washington, D.C. has asked several times that I come live with her and her family. And now that I know my leaving won't leave you in a pickle, Bess, I've decided it's time to go.
Bess wasn't sure what to say. Was Edwina telling the truth, that she wanted to leave? It would be unlike her to lie, and she had spoken recently of wishing she could see her children and grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, more frequently. Still, Bess couldn't help but feel that she and Joe had somehow pushed Edwina out. Edwina came to the table, two plates of eggs in her hands. She set one down in front of Joe and the other in front of Bess.
Bess, I know you well enough to see that you're worried that you've done something wrong. Please take me at my word that I would have happily lived here with you and Joe to the end of my days if I hadn't had family elsewhere. I'd rather looked forward to the two of you caring for me once I was no longer able to care for myself, as I know you would have done so with wit and grace. Joe would have read Shakespeare to me for hours on end, and Bess would have sat next to my bed and fed me spoonfuls of her delicious cherry pie. I was all set to be absolutely coddled.
Perhaps we'll spend time coddling you before you go, Joe offered. I'll brush up on my 12th night.
Alas, I leave Friday morning, Edwina informed him.
Don't worry, my good friend Mr. Fellows will be accompanying me on my trip. He's never been to Washington, but he does so love Southerners.
Bess lifted a forkful of eggs to her mouth, but she didn't taste anything. Why didn't anything ever happen at the right speed? Here it had taken simply forever for Bess and Joe to share their news and finally live together as man and wife, and now Edwina was leaving with barely a moment's notice. Edwina, still standing in the same spot, said,
"Bess, say something, dear. I fear I've upset you, but this is absolutely the right thing to do."
"What's the right thing to do?" Helen asked, prancing into the kitchen. Bess thought it unfortunate that today of all days, her normally sluggish daughter decided to hop out of bed.
"I hope it's to make me toast and jam. I'm simply famished."
When Edwina told her of her imminent departure, Helen's response came as a surprise. She didn't break into desperate sobs, nor did she stomp out of the room in protest. No, she simply planted a kiss on the old woman's cheek.
"We'll all miss you, of course, but you're right. You should go. After all, Jane's leaving for college in 2 weeks, and I'll be leaving in 2 short years. Then you'll just have Mother and Pops to entertain you. It sounds rather dull, doesn't it?"
Helen turned to Bess and Joe.
"No offense, of course."
"None taken," Bess said, and then she began laughing. Helen was absolutely right. Edwina would be happier with more people around, people to help and instruct and advise. Life around here would be, well, maybe not dull, but awfully quiet once the girls were gone. As quiet as they'd ever been, as a matter of fact. Bess looked at her husband across the table and smiled. She couldn't wait.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.